Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. No Americans were harmed. They took care to avoid civilian casualties. After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
And how did President Obama get the news of that killing and custody? With the words Geronimo EKIA. That's how CIA Director Leon Panetta informed the president and others in the Situation Room on Sunday, according to press accounts now emerging, that Osama bin Laden, codenamed Geronimo, was dead. EKIA, enemy killed in action. If you haven't seen it, check out the photo on page F3 of the New York Times today. Obama, Biden, Clinton, and others on the national security team in the Situation Room following Sunday's raid in real time, with Panetta apparently doing the play-by-play from CIA headquarters across the Potomac. And what really happens next? Can the Americans in Afghanistan come home now? Is this really mission accomplished? 8 years to the day after President Bush's infamous mission accomplished speech before the Iraq War went bad. Our first take on all this today comes from someone personally connected to the big events in this 10-year saga. Paul Rykoff was a National Guardsman and first responder living in Lower Manhattan on 9/11/2001. He did respond to the scene that night. Then he served in the Iraq War as a first lieutenant and an infantry rifle platoon leader. When he came home, he founded the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And he went back to the Trade Center Sunday night upon hearing the news of Osama bin Laden's death and tweeted, "Lots of vets down here and drunk college students and drunk vet college students. Gotta love the GI Bill." And he is also the author of Chasing Ghosts, Failure and Facades in Iraq, A Soldier's Perspective, published in 2006. Paul Rykoff, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be with you again.
First, having been a player, not a spectator of history these last 10 years, what does the death of bin Laden mean to you?
It's good news. I think it's good news for America, it's good news for the world, but it's especially good news for the military and veterans community. For the last 10 years, we've been working hard to try to find this guy. We've been sacrificing so much ourselves and on behalf of our families. And I think there were times when a lot of folks moved on to other things and forgot about this, and we were always focused on it. So I think it's good news. It's sobering. It really forces us to reflect on how much we've given up and how much we've lost. But I think this is a really good news for our military, especially at a time when they needed a boost. It's been a rough couple of months with the economy and losing a lot of folks close to us. And I think there's an immediate morale boost on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan and here at home.
For all the failure and all the facades in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, failure and facades, to borrow from your book title, do you think Iraq and Afghanistan vets and the current troops feel more today that they fought for something rather than nothing that they may have felt 3 days ago?
I think they do. I think many do. And I think it's important to realize that a lot of folks who joined the military in the last decade or so joined because of 9/11. Now, they may not have agreed with Iraq, but that's where they were sent. And I've met a lot of young people over the years who said that was what inspired me to join. They wanted to defend their country. They wanted to represent their communities, and they went wherever their government sent them. And I think it was a really powerful moment to be at ground zero around so many vets, so many folks who had sacrificed over the years, and cops and firemen. There's a really special bond there. As I walked through the crowd, I could tell that they were a bit more sober. They were a bit more contemplative. You could see, you know, the military pins and the hats and the other designators where we knew each other, but a lot of folks didn't even recognize. It wasn't like 9/11 where we had uniforms on and we all stood out and you could tell who we were. But there was a real feeling of reflection, and talking to vets around the country and around the world, I think that's a common theme.
So do you think you could tell kind of by looking at their eyes or with these other clues that you were just talking about, who were the vets, who were the first responders, as opposed to just the drunken college students who came to make the scene?
Yeah, I felt like I could. I mean, sometimes it's a haircut or a pair of boots. Also, it was a number of guys who were fixing the flags and making sure they were hung correctly. And then there were a couple of Marines that actually climbed a street post and hung a Marine Corps flag and sung the Marine Corps hymn. And so there was a real feeling of pride and celebration. And I think it's important to know, too, that this is a community that's probably not going to get a victory parade. You know, they're not going to walk through the city and get showered in ticker tape. And they have been slugging away for a very, very long time. And I think there's a feeling like they deserve some praise, you know, not just for this situation, but for their service over the last 10 years and the tremendous sacrifices they've made.
Which group down there Sunday night was chanting USA, USA, or could that have been any of them?
It seemed like everybody at one point. And I think it was very strange for me because I had been down there 10 years earlier where folks were chanting USA, USA also, but it was when President Bush was speaking with the bullhorn, and it was a much more somber tone, a much different tone. So I never could have imagined that I'd be going back down to Ground Zero after all that to see folks celebrating in what at some point, you know, really felt like more like Times Square than like Ground Zero.
Do you think it's different today for Iraq vets like yourself than Afghanistan vets or troops? Because part of the mission in Afghanistan was to actually get bin Laden, but not in Iraq.
Yeah, I think it's a bit different, but we all knew we were united in the same objectives. And to be honest with you, nobody knew where he was anyway. So, you know, there were probably folks who thought he might be in Iraq as well at one point. And ultimately we found out he was in Pakistan. So, you know, I think there's a real feeling of unity and a real feeling of cohesion throughout the military, and also tremendous respect for the special forces operators involved in this operation. You know, Dev Group and SEAL Team 6 are not a group that many folks have heard of before this, but in the military community, we have tremendous respect for their professionalism, their sacrifice, their dedication, and I've been around these guys. I have friends in those units, and they're really awe-inspiring. I mean, the level they function at is like nothing else I've ever seen, and I think over the next couple of days, we're going to find out more about their training and their professionalism and their lifestyle. This is a total and complete lifestyle dedication.
Listeners, give us a call if you want to talk to Paul Rieckhoff today. He was there as a first responder on 9/11. He was back there Sunday night to celebrate or mark the death of Osama bin Laden. He fought in Iraq and came back and founded the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Yesterday, we took calls from a lot of different groups of people, but we didn't get to ask for anybody who actually went to Ground Zero yourself on Sunday night after the news came out. So anybody who was there can call in, but anybody, 212-433-WNYC. For Paul Rieckhoff, 212-433-9692, or post your comment or question to our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Paul, can you imagine that scene that was described in the White House Situation Room with the president and his top aides watching this unfold? And hearing Leon Panetta say, Geronimo, E-K-I-A, meaning bin Laden, enemy killed in action. Can you just imagine?
You know, it gives me goosebumps. And I can't imagine. I've been in that room before for a meeting at the White House, and I know how impressive that room is. It's also a very small room. And I've been on operations myself when my guys are outside the wire and you're tracking from a radio or from reports coming in, and I know how tough that can be. I mean, it's really indescribable. But I think, you know, the looks on their faces show you the gravity of the situation and show the intensity of what they were experiencing. I also hope that folks recognize that this does bring some closure to many folks, but it doesn't eliminate the threat to our troops overseas. April was the deadliest month in Iraq in almost 2 years. And, you know, now the Taliban is going to launch another spring offensive in Afghanistan. So we want to make sure that Americans don't lose focus on our troops and families who are over there right now during this critical time and are still running missions. You know, right after that mission was concluded, folks went back outside the wire, went back on a checkpoint, went back out on patrol. And I know that there was, you know, a lot of reflection and celebration throughout the military, but there's probably a lot of business as usual going on right now, too.
Yeah. Now, I can't imagine Leon Panetta actually saying Geronimo, E-K-I-A. You know Leon Panetta? He's like a college professor and a politician.
Right.
He's not a military. Geronimo, E-K-I-A. It just doesn't seem like Leon Panetta.
Yeah, well, I think that this is a moment a lot of folks have been waiting for, and there's a lot of pent-up emotion, and Panetta's a professional, and he understands the special ops community, understands JSOC, and he understands the tactical element of this, and if that's probably the language that the guys on the ground were using. If they said EKIA, then that's what he probably echoed up, and there was a lingo, I'm sure, that was involved in code words throughout, because you can't just say everything across the radio, so... they probably had a key in their head of all the different terms that they were hoping to hear as that operation unfolded.
I guess so. Tim in Newark, you're on WNYC with Paul Rykoff. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
All right. I just wanted to first, thank the gentleman who you have in the studio for his service. I'm retired law enforcement, and I served on the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force in Newark and New York. And it is a very great day for the United States, the killing of Osama bin Laden, as it were. But he is just one small piece of a very large puzzle. It's kind of like winning the battle, but the war still needs to be fought. And everybody should still stand firm behind the troops and have the same level of commitment and fortitude that the troops have to be there for them in the long run, as well as be behind our president and commend him for his hard work and diligence. Regarding our political persuasions, we're all Americans, and we should act as such. We're all Americans before we're Democrats or Republicans or anything else.
Tim, more people need to talk like you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And Paul Rykoff, what about that idea that the war is still going on, which obviously it is? This is America's longest war ever, 10 years now in Afghanistan. The original mission was to get bin Laden and break up the camps that could plot more strikes on Americans, especially here in the U.S. Have we done that? What's left to fight for in Afghanistan now?
That's a good question, and I think that's a dialogue we have to have as a nation, and I think that's what, as veterans and military folks, we want to see. You want to see folks involved in this conversation, because there were plenty of times a few years ago where we jokingly referred to it as Forgottistan, and we were worried that folks, there are some folks now who think there's no war at all in Iraq. They think that the plug has been pulled and there are no folks over there. So, I don't have the total answer for you, Brian, but I think it's a conversation we have to have. I expect to see a drawdown over time. I think that's what the administration had planned anyway. This will probably accelerate that. But the other thing I want to comment on is that sense of unity. It really is memorable and something like I've never seen in my life. I don't know if you have, but it was the only time I felt it was 9/11, and that was for something very different. So there is this sense of unity and cohesion and pride and patriotism, and I hope it carries over, because we need it in the next couple of years, especially the veterans community needs it. We're facing tremendous challenges, staggering unemployment rates and health and education challenges as these folks come home and transition into civilian life, and we need them to remember how they felt this week and carry that over, especially as we go into Memorial Day, which is only about 3 weeks away, and we remember all those that died, not just in Afghanistan, but throughout our military history. So I hope folks remember that feeling and keep it with them and spend Memorial Day doing a bit more than just having a barbecue.
We definitely need that unity to celebrate the vets who you represent as they come home and as they're already home. But I don't know, in terms of national unity, I think people are going to look up in a few days, if they're not starting to already, and say, well, it's great that we got bin Laden, but it doesn't put anybody back to work.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. And that's absolutely our country, right? It wouldn't be America and New York if folks weren't arguing a few days later, and that's what makes our country great. But I honestly do believe that there is some sense of cohesion in Washington. I was just there this weekend. I'm going to be down there again next week, and I hope it can help people stay focused, and I hope it helps people understand that if we all get together, we can do great things. And I know that the American public's been very frustrated with Washington because they seem to be fighting with each other much more than with our enemies. So maybe this will be a reality check, and hopefully we'll have a better tone. And if not, I hope Americans will keep politicians from both sides in line.
Paul Rykoff, first responder on 9/11. Then he served in Iraq, came home and founded the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, was there at Ground Zero on Sunday night celebrating. Jamal in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. My question is, from the perspective of Martin Luther King, Gandhi, and Buddha, where does it end? Hate begets more hate. So he killed 3,000 of our people, and that was due to the occupation, as Paul, the congressman said, from Texas, because our troops were in Saudi Arabia for 10 years, and we refused to take our troops out from there. And that was the reason why 9/11 happened. And then we went and massacred 1 million Iraqis and Afghanis. So one person's, terrorism is another person's freedom struggle. And if we continue occupying the land from Kashmir to Israel to Chechnya, Muslims are going to fight back.
Jamal, thank you. And Paul Rykoff, you know, it may not be that simple, and I'm not sure about his numbers, but there certainly is an element of each of those things.
Yeah, well, I mean, and, you know, nobody hates war more than the warriors. I mean, we've seen tremendous human cost on both sides, and I've seen that myself, and I know our community has as well. But, I mean, what would you have us do, not kill bin Laden? I mean, you know, this is absolutely critical from a tactical and strategic perspective. And you know, it's not going to solve everything. It's not going to be a silver bullet. But it is a significant military victory. I think it's a significant policy victory. And I think it's going to reverberate, you know, throughout the Middle East. And so, sometimes you need soldiers to take people out and do what they do. And that's what happened in this case. And I think we have to understand that there's obviously a larger framework and we all want peace. But this is hopefully going to save lives ultimately.
Let me read you an email that I got today from a South Asian listener who writes about her ambivalence. Osama and a sense of ambivalence is the subject line of this. And she writes, I have no compunction about Osama's death. I am glad he's dead. Good riddance. But this moment has come with such a cost. Not only embassy bombings, USS Cole, September 11th, Bali, Madrid, London, etc., but also the wars, the death of the soldiers, the innocent Iraqis, Afghan, and Pakistanis who were accidentally killed, Daniel Pearl, the antagonism that has grown in this country, and we are just all so much bitter and just permanently angry. And finally, it looks like we got to him, and it had something to do with rendition and the torture of KSM and others. It's like sipping an incredibly strange cocktail. It makes you drunk and eventually sick. It's some deep thoughts there. What about the rendition, the fact that apparently information was obtained through the so-called rendition program where detainees were sent to prisons in other countries and then harshly interrogated in possible torture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to get the identity of this courier to bin Laden that then eventually led to Sunday's actions. Does it sour the taste in your mouth at all to think that some of that may have led to this act of justice on the other hand?
It does for me. I don't think torture is an American value. I mean, I think it's contrary to everything we're about. And in the past, it hasn't proven to be effective. And, you know, over the next couple of days, we'll find out exactly what happened. But I think there was a tremendous cost to rendition. There's a tremendous cost, especially in the Middle East. And I think that's why, you know, so many folks in the military have tried so hard to be respectful of local cultures and to be respectful of religious beliefs and even the extent to which they dealt with bin Laden's body. I mean, I think there was a lot of forethought given to the way things would be perceived. And you know, American soldiers respect their enemy, and I think that our military has always held that to be true. But there's an overflowing, complicated series of emotions we're all feeling right now. And I don't ever, you know, consider what I'm doing celebrating, and I think most of us in the military wouldn't either. There's a lot of reflection. There's a lot of processing. And there's just a lot of gratitude for the folks who've been involved and the folks we lost and kind of a reflection on our families and what really matters. I mean, a couple of days ago, we were talking about Donald Trump and the royal wedding. You know, hopefully this puts in perspective a little more what really matters.
One more question from June in Manhattan. June, you're on WNYC.
Oh, hi. I was holding on to ask a question about the GI Bill, but while I was waiting, you mentioned this issue of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and torture, and I just wanted to refer people to Democracy Now! This morning. They can go to democracynow.org. Amy Goodman reported that, in fact, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed never gave up any information as a result of waterboarding. She said he was waterboarded 100 times and gave up no information, and it was months later, after they stopped torturing him, that he actually gave up information. So people can check democracynow.org and check on that. But the question I wanted to ask Paul about the GI Bill that was passed, about a year ago with increased benefits, it never gets talked about, and I was wondering how it's working out for the veterans.
Yeah, that's a big thing of yours, Paul, so I'm glad she asked the question.
Yeah, it's actually been a really transformative piece of legislation that went through a few years ago, and it was interesting to see how many vets were actually down at Ground Zero who were using it at City College and at schools around the country. It's really, really set a lot lot of folks up for success. It was a tremendous legislative victory for IAVA, and last year we helped almost 5,000 vets around the country use that GI Bill. So that's a really huge benchmark, and I think a sign of how our country is finally trying to correct some of the mistakes of Vietnam by really honoring the folks who are coming home. We're trying to take care of them, and the GI Bill is an important step. And if folks are listening and want to find out more, if you go to newgibill.org, we've got a calculator there for vets to check out their benefits. You can read all the latest news. We recently pushed for significant upgrades that now cover vocational school. But one of our guys is actually testifying today on Capitol Hill to push for upgrades. There are still some bumps in the road, and we've got to make sure that the benefits go out smoother. But especially here in the New York area, from City College to Columbia, there are hundreds and thousands of vets taking advantage of that GI Bill who we believe are really going to be important, transformative leaders, not just for this city, but for our entire country.
Well, definitely one of the silver linings that have come out of this entire 10-year cycle, the new GI Bill, making these educational benefits available for people who serve in our military. And Paul Rykoff, founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, I want to thank you again for your service, as we have done before, but it certainly becomes newly relevant at a moment like this. And thanks, as always, for coming on the show with us.
Thank you, Brian. Really appreciate it, and I've appreciated your show, especially in these last 10 years. It's been really, really great.
Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, if you're interested in interrogation and rendition and its connection to the death of Osama bin Laden, we're going to have an online chat right after the show today. So noon today, Eastern Time, as soon as this show is over on the radio, we have Karen Greenberg, who's an expert on all of this stuff from the NYU Law School. And that, of course, will be at our politics website, as we are doing noon Tuesday chats every week now on itsafreecountry.org. And today's will be about interrogation, rendition, and the death of Osama bin Laden. So spread the word to anybody you know who's interested in that topic, and we'll do that online live chat at noon today at itsafreecountry.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will look at the impact of the death of Osama bin Laden on presidential politics here in the United States. Stay tuned.